This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of the book is Chaz, subtitled Foreshadowing Destiny, and our author is Mike Arthur. Mike, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Jay. Appreciate you having me on the air.
How would you describe your book? Is it an adventure tale, action-adventure, mystery? What category does it fall under?
Well, I'd actually say it's an action-adventure story. It's actually kind of a Christian fiction. It's got a lot of Christian baseline into it, but it's a fictional story. It starts with a man trapped in Colorado fighting his way home.
Trapped in Colorado. The back of your book reads this and poses this question. Have you ever wondered what life would be like if an electromagnetic pulse hit the United States? That's the premise, and in the story itself, the first chapter, one of your key characters mentions this in his narrative. Listen, I hate to tell you, but the United States has suffered a nuclear attack. Expand for us the story and tell us the main character's name.
His name is actually Chaz, and that's C-H-A-S. I've got him pictured as a man in his 40s. He's actually a sales engineer by trade, and he finds himself in eastern Colorado, and his home is actually in Missouri. What happens here is we have an EMP pulse, and of course people know that with an EMP pulse, you lose pretty much anything that's electronic. That would be from telecommunications down to your computer, even your modern-day car. So he finds himself in this situation whereby without these assets, so to speak, he has to find a way to get himself home, and he's got roughly 600 miles to travel.
What you've just outlined is a present-day concern, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, and it doesn't even require a nuclear attack. You know, an EMP pulse can actually come from a solar flare, which historically has happened. So, yes, it is a very grave concern.
You mentioned in your opening commentary or comments that this had a Christian theme or Christian underlying message, and yet in reading your biography or your history, it wasn't always that way. You, at one point in your life, were an agnostic.
That is correct. That is correct. All the way up into my late 30s, I actually fought the Word of God. Had a very troubling period in my time in my life whereby I just didn't want to believe. I guess you could say I was hard-headed and hard-hearted, and had some things that happened to me, had a near-death experience that kind of transcended everything and turned me around and pointed me in what I want to say is the right direction.
What motivated you to put this story together?
Well, actually what happened was when 911 transpired, I had friends of mine who actually got trapped on the road, and they had a very difficult time getting themselves home. No air travel, of course. Rental cars were all gone. I even had one buddy of mine that actually went out and bought a brand new Suburban just so he could drive home from Phoenix back to Wisconsin. So I thought to myself, you know, what would happen if we had an EMP pulse and you actually had no travel, no communications, and a man had to struggle and get his way home? And I got to thinking along with that venue would be the rapture. And let's just say we had an EMP pulse, the rapture coincided with it. You have a lot of people missing at that point in time, good, solid-based Christians. And what you end up with now is a situation where the people who are left, let's just say they're a little bit less than trustworthy. And so he has to contend with that, find his way home. And so that was everything I thought about when I put the book together.
This book, the term rapture, that's a Christian term and doesn't have anything to do with kissing your sweetheart. Explain what the rapture means in your viewpoint.
You can actually take 2 Thessalonians talks about it in the Bible, about in the twinkling of an eye, a disappearance. There's a belief among certain Christians that at a given point in time, Christ shall come back for what they call his bride. And a lot of Christians at that point in time shall be taken up, or upon a call by God or a loud trumpet, they shall be taken up into heaven. And I know that not all Christians believe that, but a fair majority I follow do, people like John Hagee, Perry Stone, David Jeremiah. A lot of those people, if you get on their website, you can actually see and look at some of the information they have concerning the rapture.
In your book, does that count as a major focus of the story, or is there more to it than that?
Well, and actually, if you keep in back of your mind, it actually takes a lot of the people on a day-to-day basis out of the realm of the world. For example, he meets a military patrol in the book, and the officer who he is talking to talks about 40% of the military has been, I can't even say the word, incapacitated because of the lack of personnel. And so, yes, there are impacts into the story with people missing, law enforcement missing, good solid base Christians by the synopsis of the story are gone.
Who do you think this book is going to appeal to and why?
Well, it's been kind of interesting. I've had the book out since August, and the people who have contacted me are people like doomsday preppers, people who like action-adventure. I've actually had several Christians that have called and asked me questions about things just like the rapture. There's a lot of scripture I put into the book. It underlines things that are happening in the book, some of the themes that I actually wanted Chaz to talk to. Matter of fact, I'll take on different subject matter in the book as a moment of thought on Chaz's part. For example, I'll go after hackers. And I think they're immoral in the fact that the damage they do is far beyond the payment they make in as far as punishment. Just as an example, I also talk to different things like the U.S. Government and their spending. I think this country's got a serious problem when you take a look at the national debt. And I outline in one of my chapters some of the different things that it doesn't matter which party, but they've all made mistakes that have contributed to this debt and the situation we find ourselves in today.
So your key character, Chaz, would you describe him as a seeker in this story?
Yes, I would. Yes, I would. He's a seeker in the fact that he's actually looking to solidify his own personality and get a better grasp of the knowledge of God and what's taking place in his world. He's a thinker. He's a person that takes a look at all different aspects of life and tries to mentally work his way through it and come up with the right solution. A lot of it's scripture-based.
You've got 170 pages. How long did it take you to actually pen this novel?
Can you believe 2 years?
2 years.
Yeah. And part of the reason being is I wrote it on a part-time basis. I travel extensively, and with evenings to myself sitting in my hotel room, a lot of the book was written in longhand. And then I'd have to come home, and I or my wife would transcribe it over onto the computer.
Well, but that in itself is an amazing task. If I wrote my materials in longhand, I couldn't read it. So that's a miracle in itself.
I understand. Some of mine was hard to decipher, too.
And is this the first book you've written, or are you prolific in writing? Is this the first thing you've
published?
No, this is actually
the first one I put together.
And are you writing a second sequel to this?
Well, here's kind of the situation. What I'd like to do, depending on how the sales on this one go and if it becomes well-received, I've actually got in the back of my mind a trilogy. And it would actually coincide with not only the rapture, but the time of Jacob's trouble, that seven-year period.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got some outlines on it, but there again, it just depends, to be honest with you, the financials.
Absolutely. And how would you introduce this book to someone who doesn't know you or even know the idea of a rapture?
Well, what I've basically done is I've told people it's an action-adventure story. I says, think of my character as a cross between John Wayne and Indiana Jones. I said, if you like a good action-adventure story with a little Christian background to it, well, I says, pick up the book and read it. And I've actually, it's been kind of intriguing. I've got one lady who's called me and said that she's actually bought seven of them, and she's distributed them to different friends. She thought some of the lessons in the book they could learn, and I just kind of chuckled at that. But it's been very interesting, the feedback I've get. I've actually had people who are what I consider non-Christians come up and start asking me questions about, like, the rapture and different things that I quoted as scripture in the book. So that's been what I think kind of fascinating and been a very positive aspect coming out of that book.
So the book really can appeal to a large audience from your perspective.
Very large audience.
Is there a scene or an action moment in the novel that would make a great enticement for someone to read this book?
Well, I can think of a couple of them. There's And first off, I want to kind of quantify the fact that this book, at certain aspects, can get just a little bloody. But, of course, the Bible isn't actually without blood. But, yeah, there's a chapter in there, two of them, where Chaz actually has to defend himself. And there it involves guns, which is kind of a naughty word in today's world, but a fact of matter. And I think that what they'll find, especially those people like Action Venture, will eat that up. I've had a lot of guys who have read the book and told me that the action side of the book was just phenomenal. Matter of fact, when they picked it up to start reading it, they said it moved so quickly they couldn't put it down.
Beautiful. That's a great commendation of your work.
Well, I'd like to think so.
What sets this book apart? There are other books in the marketplace that are action adventures and some that are religious in its context. I'm thinking of the Left Behind series.
And to be honest with you, Jay, it's kind of an offshoot in some aspects of a Left Behind series. The only thing is that we've got total isolation in this case, and it's the story of one man's trials. In Left Behind, you have a whole... I don't know if you've ever seen the movies or not. I found them fascinating, but you'll have a whole political situation where everybody has to work together to overcome. In this case, one man against the world.
Was there a challenging part of putting this book together?
Oh, boy, I tell you what, there were several. Time being one. The other one is I had several rewrites. I got into it. It's kind of funny. Once you start to write something and then you go back and take a look at it and you realize maybe you've got errors or just don't quite come together, then you have to do a total rewrite. And I would say, yeah, I wrote the book, but I bet I rewrote it two times.
Wow.
To get it all together.
That is challenging. Where do we get copies of this book? The title again is Chaz, the subtitle Foreshadowing Destiny, and our author, Mike Arthur. Mike, where do we get copies of your book?
Well, I've got a website out there called arthurauthor.com/book, and through that website you can pick it up at, say, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Westbo Publishing, who is my publishing company.
Thank you for sharing the information on your story.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Jay.
For Indie Book Publishing, Westbo Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everybody. This is Pete Dix of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station? Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear the latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Connect with Juliana and connect with what lies beneath. Friday afternoons at 4 or 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Juliana is a marriage, family, and child therapist who wants people to connect. Connect with what lies beneath, those truths and answers. And through her counseling practice, she has helped others find their personal power and fulfill their dreams. And she wants to do the same for you. Here on Connect with Juliana. Through intimate discussions, intriguing subject matters, and the expertise of her guests. For more on the show and Juliana, check out her webpage. Connect with Juliana in media.com. Juliana will cover it all. Nothing is off limits. She wants to know what matters to you. Make the connection. Tune into TogiNet to connect with Juliana to find out the facts that could be hidden beneath the surface. Connect with Juliana on TogiNet to make a quality connection in your life. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing, Abbott Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of the book is The Poe Consequence, and our author, Keith Steinbaum. Thank you, Keith, for joining me today.
Thank you, Jay. Nice to be on the show.
Tell me about this book. I know that there is some relationship to the poem Spirits of the Dead by Edgar Allan Poe. This story deals with gang violence, and that's the backdrop. Am I understanding that correctly?
That is the backdrop. However, one thing I'm proud about with the story is that it involves more than just gang warfare and the supernatural. I believe that the book carries various aspects of humanity on a real and relatable level, how several of the main characters deal with their own particular tragic circumstances. And that was my goal in the book, not just to scare people and for those who enjoy that kind of stuff, but also to engage the reader as much as possible in a personal, relatable, human way.
Would you call this story character-driven, story-driven, adventure-driven? How would you describe it?
Yes, character-driven is a very good way to describe the story, and I've always been drawn myself to character-driven stories. It's for me, it's interesting. It's a synergistic effect in the sense that if you have an exciting scene, the characters in that scene will enhance the scene because you're familiar with how the characters' personalities are and how they relate in certain situations and how they'll react in certain situations. And at the same time, the scene itself will enhance the character or personality for those particular people that have been following those characters throughout the book. So they work with each other, and like I said, I think they help each other to make it even more powerful, as opposed to an individual situation.
Well, give us a brief outline of your main characters and the story.
One of the things I'm most proud of, perhaps the most thing I'm proud of, is that the book has six main characters, and I've done a lot of reading, and I'm sure a lot of people that were listening to this show, I'm sure, also have done a lot of reading. Six main characters, I think, are a lot, but I took that challenge on. It also has three very important minor ones, and the book has two twin brothers, Warren and Kevin Palmer, Warren's son, Seth. Then later in the book, you get introduced to the female character, the main character. Her name is Veronica Torres. Her brother's name is Alex Torres, who's a gang member. And then the King is a name for another gang member in the rival group. King is in the North Rampart Lobos, and Chase is in the Alvarado Street Diablos. And those are the two gangs that are rivals, similar to in real-life Bloods and Crips.
The title of the book, The Poe Consequence, where did that title come from?
Well, in life, there are consequences to actions. And what happens in the story is, without giving too much away, is due to an accidental drive-by killing where an innocent is killed. The two gangs responsible for that drive-by killing face a consequence, an Edgar Allan Poe-inspired consequence from beyond the grave, you might say. So that's where the supernatural aspect comes in.
And how did you get motivated to put this together? What in your history caused you to want to be an author, to write this story?
Well, that's the genesis for the idea started. It's actually a convergence of three different things. It's two based in reality and one in my imagination. Without getting into too much detail, and I don't want to talk too long on this. Hopefully, I don't want to keep the interest going. But the idea started after I read a book actually in the 1990s from a woman named Leon Bing who interviewed both the Bloods and the Crips, and it was a fascinating book. But at the same time, it's horrific when you read about the braggadocio of their exploits and how they feel so invincible. And their arrogance, their lack of consciousness on the violence that they commit. But, however, a book like that did stick with me. At the same time, for my job, through the years, I'm in the landscape business, and for many, many years, I've worked in gang neighborhoods. It's I live in Los Angeles, but from San Diego all the way up to Palmdale, I've spent hundreds of hours in these types of neighborhoods. I've seen the kinds of gangbangers that hang around. I've heard many stories from managers, some pretty brutal stories. Every morning, for many, many years, in an area east of downtown Los Angeles, on Medford and Soto Streets, there was a large yard that we'd meet our guys every morning. And, it was a street with a large white cinder block wall. It had graffiti on the wall. Actually, it was pretty good art. It was an Indian head which pointing an arrow towards on the other side of the block. There was a Indian woman, and maybe it was a Cupid type thing. But in between the two Indians was a large R.I.P. and Carlos Apache. And I assume that this particular gang member, Carlos, or I guess maybe they called him Apache, maybe that was his gang name, I assume he was killed because of the R.I.P. So that got me thinking of an idea. And as well, another real-life situation was in that same yard. We used to carry a lot of plants and flowers in the corner of the property. And about three times a year, we would come to the yard and find a saint-covered candle outside the yard, with our plants and flowers around that candle, and there was always a couple of either Budweiser bottles or cans. It was always Budweiser, it was obviously in memoriam. So, I assume that to Carlos or Apache, this probably was in his memory. My story started developing with this character. So I developed an imaginary character named Apache. And the idea of the drive-by killing was in honor of, regarding the Alvarado Street Diablos, they were going to have a drive-by killing in his honor to kill a member of the North Rampart Lobos who wound up killing Carlos Apache. So that's where this started. So again, as you know, being in this situation, I just started really, really getting the wheels rolling on the story and where this concept came from. So that's kind of how it started.
Is this your first published novel?
Yes, it is. It's my first published novel. Yes, it is. In my previous, years, I was a song lyricist. I had minor success. Different songs cut throughout the world, which was nice. But and I started writing poetry in high school. So I've been a creative writer for most of my life, but this is my first novel, and it was very, very challenging. And I'm very, very happy to have been able to complete it.
Well, I think you should be pleased. You have 334 pages of storyline that you've put together in this first publication. Who do you think this book will appeal to, and why?
In addition to the fans of the supernatural, for anyone that is as saddened or disgusted by gang warfare in their towns, in their cities, in their newspapers, in their magazines, whenever they read about it on their television sets, perhaps all of us get that sense of, unfortunately, that sense of helplessness, but at the same time, you want to see them get their comeuppance. So the liberating point and part about writing a book, a fictional story, is that you can do whatever you want. So this is where I came up with a supernatural entity that that helps get that revenge, and perhaps all of us can feel a little bit of that sense of justice, if you can call it that, towards what these gang members do. However, as I mentioned earlier in the interview, Jay, the other aspects of the story is more than just supernatural. It's a story that a character-driven story, as I've said, that involves racism, alcoholism, redemption, and these are traits that are quite human and recognizable within our society, and I feel hopefully that would make for an engrossing character study for the reader.
Is there another author that you have been an admirer of that influenced your writing style?
Well, as far as supernatural entities go, I think the king for me is literally King, Stephen King. I love Stephen King, and I've read many of his books. So certainly no one, I think, gets into that kind of aspect of creative writing as well as he does, at least in my opinion. I'm a big Dennis Lane fan, Pat Conroy. I mean, that has nothing to do with the supernatural, but these guys are great wordsmiths and just can take a scene and characters and just describe them as well as I could ever imagine. So those are a couple of my other favorite authors as well.
Well, after reading this book, what do you want readers to take away from it? What is the underlying theme?
Well, for the story itself, I think all of us can relate to the fact that we live in cities, we live in towns where there's divisions of cultures or religions or race, and what that leads to, or commonly what it leads to, are generalizations and stereotypes that I'm not necessarily saying they're born from ignorance, but rather what we're taught, what we observe from a distance. What my story does, what I tried to do, is bring different group elements together through through, and you will read in my book, through the initial act of fate that validates those stereotypes, yes, on the one hand, but also blows them to smithereens on the other. Many people have more things in common than they might realize, whether it's negative things such as loneliness or alcoholism or racism, to positive things such as compassion or redemption or love. And so within the concept of the storyline of the supernatural, there's a lot of other currents that run through the story that I want the reader to get engrossed in and hopefully captivated by to maintain their interest.
If this was picked up by a major movie house or maybe even a network series producer, what scene is going to stand out to them when they read this and make them want to put it on film?
I like the question a lot. I do like that question a lot. There is a character. One of the things about this book is most of it takes place in Los Angeles, but there is some of it that takes place in New Orleans, and including the beginning of the book. And there is a psychic, a mysterious psychic in this story that plays a very important role. She appears a couple of different times in the book, one in the beginning and one near the end. And her name is Madame Sibilia. The tarot card reading that she has at the beginning, and then the meeting that she has with Kevin Palmer later in the story, I think add that Twilight Zone-ish effect that I think to be interested by. One other scene that might be interesting, of course, is the climax and what happens near the end when there's a race for time to save somebody's life. And at that point, hopefully, the person either watching the movie or reading the book is very drawn to this character and these characters involved in this race for time. And at that point, hopefully, I have them hooked, and that would be of great interest, I hope.
Is there an ultimate positive message that you are portraying in this book?
Yes, I would like to think that. It's similar to, you know, your previous question regarding what I want the reader to take away from it. We live in a world of great differences, yes, but we also have many things in common. And if we can ever heighten our sense of communication and understanding towards each other, it's very unusual to see people of different financial situations in their life or cultures or religions actually come together and realize that there's a lot of commonalities that we all share. So without getting too preachy, because I certainly don't mean to, I suppose that would be the best answer I could give you.
Sure. And if you were to describe this book in two or three words, what words would you use to describe its characters and the plot line?
The story, if you would ask me some words to describe the story, perhaps, hopefully the reader would find it to be intense and engrossing, emotional, scary, frightening as well. The characters, I want the reader to be involved in them. I want them to see them as very human with flaws and diverse at the same time. And I suppose that's the best answer I can give you for the moment.
Sure. And I'm sure this book was challenging, being your first novel, 334 pages. What was the most challenging part of putting this novel together?
Well, I will tell you, yeah, Jay, it's 334. Originally, it was over 100 pages more. And I think anyone that writes a story knows that the editing process is very tough. And just like a Hollywood director that leaves their beloved scenes on the Hollywood, you know, on the cutting room floor, it's no different for an author. I mean, you know, in order to make the book as best as possible, you have to separate your emotions from what you think would be best for the book, and to make the book as enjoyable and fast reading as possible. It was 334, but it was before. So the most challenging part of the book, like anything creative, it starts as an idea in your head, as a seed in your head, and the most challenging thing, of course, is to commit to it, to stick with it, to sacrifice for it, to let it stay in your head and to beat you up and you live with it and it frustrates you and it takes your sleep and you're up all times of the night thinking about what you want to say and how you want to say it. You get out of bed 3-4 different times and write yourself notes. But you have to be so in love with what you're trying to do. It has to be something that you truly, truly want to do, really, really want to do. And that it gets to a point where that's where I was at. So that was the biggest challenge itself, and as I mentioned earlier in the interview, as far as the storyline, fully developing the six main characters and the three other minor ones, and making sure that they're all held together collectively. And I think this gives the story the synergistic quality I was looking for, and a better chance for having the readers stay invested emotionally.
Thank you, Keith, for sharing your story. The title of the book, again, is The Poe Consequence, and our author, Keith Steinbaum. Where do we get copies of your book?
All the usual suspects, Jay. You know, first of all, my publishing company, I'd like to thank them. That's Abbott Press. So you can go to the abbottpress.com website. And then, of course, there's Apple iBookstores, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, or any local bookstore. You could order a hardcover or a softcover copy.
Keith, I understand you've received some nice reviews on this book. Do you also have a website?
Yes, I do, Jay. If you go to KeithSteinbaum.com, you'll find my book as well as a couple of other things I have there. And you can download the first two chapters for free. So that way you can see if you do get interested in the story enough to whether want to buy it or download it on any ebook or other ways to get the regular book. So, yeah, that's one way to go.
Well, tell me about those accolades you've received on this book.
Well, one thing I'm very proud of is there's a literary website called booksandauthors.net, and for 2012, I received the Supernatural Thriller Book of the Year Award, and that was an accolade that I was very proud about, because I jokingly asked the guy, was I the only one that entered, and he said, actually, no, there were quite a few. So that showed me that the book had something to offer others other than what I hoped would be, for just my own family and friends. So that made me feel good.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Jay.
Thanks for sharing your information about this story. Is there another book in the works?
Yes, there is. It doesn't involve the supernatural, but basically it's a story that I'm working on. That two main characters are a bitter ex-rock and roll star and a young girl who's with cancer, who's a big Los Angeles Laker fan, and that's as much as I'll say for the moment.
Wow, good luck with that. We thank you for joining us and talking about The Poe Consequence. Our author, Keith Steinbaum. Thanks, Keith, for joining me today.
Thanks very much, Jay. Thank you.
For Indie Book Publishing, Abbott Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings from Steve Jorgensen and Lulu Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of the book is Poet Writes with Guru's Light, and our author is Ramakrishnan. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Tell me about the story behind the poetry that you've written in this 90-page book. Why did you write it?
Very nice question. My lifelong search for meaning is inspiring to my writing. Also, family and spiritual life inspired by everyday conditions.
And who do you think will enjoy reading your poetry?
We hope to inspire thought and reflection in all readers. Example, we gain wisdom of soul as we unfold.
In looking over the contents of your book, most of your poetry or your inspired pronouncements are short and to the point and very easy to read. Do you have anything that you've written that you'd like to share with us today?
Poetry is a voice of silent, mysterious nature, resonating with noble harmony. The philosophical poet is with great intent, bent on being a well-meant, ardent student of the transcendent. An arrow shot, we turn at not. In the moonlit night, it was exhilarating to see the trees dancing so beautifully to the music and singing of the wind. A flower is but an expression of the beauty, grace, and grandeur of Mother Nature. Healing is a shift in our energies pertaining to the constructive principles of daily helpful principle living. The glamour we clamor can only pamper, can never make souls mature.
Yeah, I like that one.
Okay.
I found that one of interest particularly.
Thank you. Simplicity is authenticity. And wisdom of divinity spans eternity in all its heavenly glory, most graciously. Freedom is born on the wings of wisdom. Wisdom is born on the wings of freedom. And those are the concise insights. Would you like something more, like a poem from the book or whatever you like?
Yes, yes, one more if you don't mind.
You want another concise sentence, is that it?
That would be fine. Yes, please do that for us.
Okay. Our occupational destiny is a matter of cosmic integrity. It is certainly wise to exercise as tremendous benefits arise. And if you like, we can go to a poem.
Please.
Would you like a little music background with that, please, if you don't mind?
I understand you're a musician, so that would be interesting to our listeners.
Yes, thank you. Music is an ancient precious art that soothes the troubled heart. Sweet songs of old, passing through generations untold, mold the heart to unfold. Music is the exquisite harmonized voice of nature and certainly of the highest caliber. Music is psyche's medicinal and healing balm, providing an exquisite sound. And I thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to recite that wonderful poem.
Well, pleasure listening to it. The music is certainly intriguing. Your background, are you in the United States currently?
Yes, I live in Hollandale, Florida.
And was the United States your birthplace?
No, I was born in Trinidad.
In Trinidad. Tell me about your early life and how you decided to become a poet.
Well, I love to study, one. I love philosophical things. I love wisdom. I love great minds. I find intriguing things that inspire, you know. So then I realized that these things, they don't come only externally. They grow from within. And so I needed a spiritual life also. Besides a mundane life, you know.
Correct.
So that's my rationale for that.
And how long does it take you to write your poetry? Is this something you do daily, or is it something that comes to you from time to time?
That's a very wonderful question. The ideas came to me from somewhere in the universe. And when it comes, it's like a voice inside will tell me to write. And then I will write, and then after I will research the subject as best I can. And then I'll begin to give it my best shot. But I've been writing since 1975.
1975.
Right.
And is this a compilation of all of your writing since 1975, or is this relatively new?
And I also have two other books that will follow.
This particular issue, this book, is it been in process of writing since 1975?
Yes. Some of it began in 1975.
Well, tell me how you would introduce this book to someone who doesn't know of your writing.
Well, again, the book captures the timely wisdom in the form of poetry, touching topics of peace, environment, discussing morality and conflicting emotions of the heart, and reflecting on some of today's issues.
Is there anything in here that would be called controversial?
Well, my ideas on reincarnation, you know, example, reincarnating is recycling, to be very brief.
So recycling is your idea that coincides with reincarnation.
Right. It's like the soul being recycled.
I see. And what would you like readers to take away from reading your book?
Well, we hope to inspire thought and reflection in all readers. Again, we gain wisdom of soul as we unfold. Hello?
Yes, and is there anything in this book that makes it unique that people will not find in the marketplace other than in this book?
Yes, the book is, number one, very elegant. It's original, creative, unique, and it's a literary classic.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, that certainly is a personal commendation. Have others read your book, and do they share your same feelings about the book?
Well, the book is very, very exciting, and it has new ideas, completely new creative ideas. It addresses the all sorts of issues that plague humanity today.
Certainly a very heady topic, what you've discussed here, all of the different ideas and solutions that you have expressed in your poetry. Was there anything challenging about putting this book together?
Yes. Hoping that it will be published and looked at, examined, and still thought.
For most writers, that's a concern when it's their first publication. Is this your first published book?
Yes, it's my first.
Your first one.
And there's more to come.
And you already have those ready for publication?
Yes, they are ready.
Where do we get copies of this book, Poet Writes with Guru's Light?
At Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, Lulu.com. It's also an e-book.
And they can also search online for Ramakrishnan, which is spelled Ramakrishnan. And if they do a search there, they will find your other works when they are published.
Yes.
Understand you do some music, and it's on YouTube.
Yes.
Is it also posted as Ramakrishnan?
Yes. I mean, the poetry there on YouTube I accompany myself on the guitar and also on the keyboard.
Thank you so much for sharing that information.
Well, I want to thank you so much. You know, I'm very grateful to you and my wonderful audience.
The title of the book again is Poet Writes with Guru's Light, and our author is Ramakrishnan. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful. Yeah.
This is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.